This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The Vermont Senate gave its unanimous approval on Friday to a bill that Governor Phil Scott asked lawmakers to fast-track. It's the state's response to the Trump administration's enforcement of immigration policy that could rely on local police to carry out deportation orders. Earlier this month, Governor Scott called on lawmakers to pass a state law to limit the policy's effect in Vermont.
This is about what I see as federal overreach in terms of our Constitution, and we can't pick and choose which part of the Constitution we protect. We need to protect all of it.
Now, the wording of the bill doesn't explicitly name President Trump or deportation of undocumented immigrants as its purpose, but there's little mystery that those issues were the motivation. Governor Scott spoke about undocumented migrants working on Vermont farms, approximately 1,000 people who fear deportation, and his desire to, quote, calm those fears. And if undocumented workers were deported, the effect would be felt across Vermont's agricultural sector. Ag Secretary Anson Tebbets said this month his agency is putting together a contingency plan in the event that some of these workers are deported.
We'd have to call together probably some volunteers. Maybe some neighboring farms could lend a hand for a few days. But yeah, we'd have to call together some people pretty quickly and help them get the cows milked and the chores done.
He even suggested the possibility that Vermont prison inmates would be trained to work on the state's dairy farms to compensate for a labor shortage if undocumented workers are deported. So back to the Vermont State House, the bill that the Senate passed is about to be debated in the House. Both chambers are dominated by the Democratic Party, but this bill that was called for by the Republican governor to blunt the efforts of a Republican president leaves GOP lawmakers in a curious place. We asked two legislators to join us today to talk through why this bill is supported by some Republicans, but not all. Senator Dustin DeGree is a Republican from Franklin County and co-sponsor of the Senate bill. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jane.
We're also joined today by Don Turner, a representative from Milton and the House Minority Leader. He says significant numbers of the House GOP caucus won't support the House version of that bill. Representative Turner, nice to have you back on the program.
Thank you very much, Jane.
Dustin DeGree, I'd like to start with you because you are a co-sponsor of this legislation that has already passed the Senate. And as I mentioned earlier, your bill never mentions Donald Trump by name, but that's clearly the backdrop for this legislation. What concerned you specifically?
Well, I think that certainly the executive orders were the nexus of this legislation and the collaboration that came between, the legislature, the administration, the attorney general, and nearly all of the law enforcement agencies that exist and do good work here in Vermont. But I really think what this bill gets to is drawing a clear line between the powers that we exercise as a state and the powers that the federal government gets to exercise as a state and not blurring those lines. I really do feel that our sovereignty as a state and how we enforce our own state laws are very important, as well as how we share that information or the information that could be shared with the federal government. So I don't think that it's necessarily about President Trump. I think it's about the ongoing conversation that we have in this country about executive power. And I do feel that parts of the executive orders were federal overreach. So I thought it was appropriate for us to get together for the, at the governor's lead with the attorney general to really define how going forward we want that relationship to work.
What was not clear in the way Vermont and federal laws are already written that delineates states' rights versus federal rights? What needed clarification?
I think it really came down to the possibility of the federal government commandeering state law enforcement. You know, I live in a border county. I represent a border county. There's at least a half a dozen border crossings in my county. The folks that work for the Border Patrol and the Customs Services, they live in our communities. They're our friends. They're our family. But we really wanted to make sure that any time the federal government looked to deputize Vermont local law enforcement who draw their power from our sovereignty, that the governor had the opportunity to look at that situation and decide whether it fell into the values of police strategies that we've laid out in Vermont over the past, nearly half decade. There are certainly instances where we work together now, and it was important to me to make sure that those instances wouldn't be changed. But going forward, we wanted to make sure that if there was an initiative or an attempt from the federal government to commandeer local law enforcement, that the governor would have the ability to say no or yes, depending on the situation.
You had political cover on this. The governor called for it, and the Senate is controlled by Democrats. They were all going to vote for it, and clearly somebody was going to write this bill. Why did you, as a Republican, want to sponsor this legislation when it's clearly in opposition to a Republican president?
Well, I think first and foremost, our job is to represent our districts, and our job as state legislators is to uphold the oaths that we made to protect the state. And I thought it was important to have a tripartisan coalition. At the very heart of this, there's lots of specifics about, information gathering and policing. But at the very heart of this, I think, is the question of how our country wants to move forward with immigration. And I'm somebody who firmly believes that legal and robust immigration is something that is not only an American value, but a very Republican value. And I also think that states' rights and really defining what our role as a state in our republic is part of our job too. So when I saw the language and saw what had been worked through and who had supported it and that it wasn't, there were things that could have been put in this bill that probably would have lost my support and the support of the governor. And I think that the way the bill was crafted was done so that we could have that broad coalition of support.
As this legislation is doing, we are going to move over to the House side as well now. And listeners, if you have a question as we talk about this specific bill, but also how Republicans in Vermont in positions of power are trying to balance national party politics and state party politics, you can give us a call. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your comments on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. There's an identical House bill to the Senate bill that we've just been talking about. And Representative Turner, it doesn't sound like you believe that the House version will get the same unanimous support that the Senate version did. Why not?
I believe that wholeheartedly, Jane, that you will not see a unanimous bill in the House. I, as leader of the House Republicans, have always said to our caucus members, you represent your constituents first and foremost. I had an opportunity, like Senator DeGree, to sign on to this bill, and I decided not to. And I did that for a number of reasons. One, that I knew that our caucus was somewhat divided on this issue. We have many people that have different beliefs, different feelings about what's going on. But personally, I didn't sign on because I have some real skepticism to this bill as well. I don't believe in selective law enforcement. And, for the last 5 years, Vermont has essentially been ignoring these people working illegally, entering the country illegally, working illegally on our farms. Now, do I want to hurt the farmers? No. But I think there should be a legal way to allow those people to come into this country to work. I have been calling on our congressional delegation to change the law federally. I mean, we have seasonal farm workers that come in, pick apples and so on every year. It's done legally, lawfully, and so on. And it doesn't put our local law enforcement or our national immigration officials in this place of indecisiveness. And, I work closely with our local police. They have a tough job already. I don't want to make it any harder for them.
And you're well aligned with our congressional delegation then, right? I mean, all of them have supported federal legislation that would find some way to legalize dairy workers and the issue, the difference between that and the, for example, apple pickers who often come from Jamaica is that that's a seasonal program and dairy work is year round. And so that seems to be where the rub is on that federal policy. Yeah, but they're aligned. They agree with you on that.
I mean,
right?
I think that these people serve a very important role in this country. The farmers need the workers need the jobs. We aren't able to attract Vermonters to do those jobs anymore. So I'd be open to that. But I don't think it's a state issue. And I don't like that we are now codifying what's been going on for a number of years with people essentially not paying attention to what the law is.
And do you think that state and local law enforcement officers should essentially be carrying out the policies of the federal government when it comes to federal immigration laws that are being disregarded?
No, I don't, Jane. I think that it puts them in a situation when they come to do their job. That's the concern I have. When they're doing their job protecting our residents and our citizens, this stuff happens. It's not a, okay, today I'm going to do immigration and today I'm going to stop somebody for speeding or shooting somebody. I'll give you an example. Last Friday, we had a shooting in Franklin County. Border Patrol who has law enforcement authority by the state, granted many years ago, were the first on scene and arrested the person that shot the person in St. Albans. We have these relationships that have been in existence for years with people being mutual aid and covering and so on. So I don't want to jeopardize that relationship by codifying something that's already existing when the real problem is needs to be addressed in Washington with these people that are working on farms.
Are you polling your caucus? Are you, when you say you're sure that it won't get the unanimous support that it did in the Senate, are you doing any?
No, we're not. This is not a caucus position. I just have some people that are very vocal in our caucus that, you know, I have one of our members is a former number two in charge of the Border Patrol. He is very concerned about this bill, and he has been very vocal to his opposition. He believes that we have thousands of ICE people, Homeland Security people that live and work in Vermont. He feels that we're questioning them and doing their jobs by putting these types of things in law. So there are a lot of people that have concerns outside of the President Trump or this or that issue or whatever. So I'm not pulling the caucus. I'm giving them the same advice I always do. We're not taking a caucus position. Reach out to your constituents. Call them. Find out what they believe. And then that's what you do when you vote. I have no position as a caucus leader to direct anybody on this particular issue.
Well, listeners, I'm curious to know what you think about this issue and where you stand. And if you have questions for Senator DeGree or Representative Turner, our number is 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post comments on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. Senator DeGree, how would you respond to what Representative Turner has been saying?
Well, I think that they're valid concerns. And what the Senate caucus did was ask those questions to make sure that those concerns were satisfied. You know, I've lived in Franklin County my entire life. The shooting that occurred on Thursday happened about 500 yards from where my grandmother lives in the church that I was baptized parking lot. I understand the role of the Border Patrol and how important that they are. If I or any or my seatmate from Franklin County thought that this was going to jeopardize the existing mutual aid relationships that we share with Border Patrol, we wouldn't have voted for it. I can tell you that right now.
So is Representative Turner wrong? I mean, where is the?
I think it's a wonderful question to ask, and it's been answered. The questioning on the Senate floor, the questioning in the Senate Judiciary Committee, the conversations we had with the administration and the Attorney General, all came back and said that these mutual aid situations will not be changed. So I shared the concern initially. I got the information from the folks that I trusted to give the information to me, and I was satisfied with the answer. But I do think that, you know, at the end of the day, I think Don's right. Folks have to listen to their constituents and do what's right. And I also share his concern and his desire for some sort of guest worker program for our dairy industry. We can't really turn a blind eye to the fact that it's a $2.5 billion industry in this state. And for those workers to disappear overnight in any numbers would be incredibly devastating, not only to the industry, but the identity of who we are and how important that industry is. But, you know, I think that what I'm hearing from some of the members of the House caucus is valid questions that the Senate caucus got answers to. And I think that's why my caucus, our caucus, was comfortable with the bill when the bill came to the floor. Maybe it's because it seemed to move quicker on the Senate side. So we had those questions. We had those conversations earlier. I know that we had a very vigorous dialogue with the administration, with the majority, with the Attorney General's office, and really by the time the bill came to the Senate floor, all seven of us were comfortable that our concerns were met and that the bill didn't have those adverse effects to those relationships.
Representative Turner, have you looked at the Senate testimony?
We have not. I mean, we have been busy with some other stuff in this House side.
You mean you don't just sit up there in the gallery?
No, I wish we did, Jane, but we don't. Unfortunately, you know, fortunately, I guess we've been busy doing some other stuff. And, you know, this bill will go into committee. It'll get there'll be testimony. There may be proposals of amendment, maybe not. But right now, you know, like I conveyed to your listeners and many people before that, you know, this is an important issue. There are some issues that go beyond this. Another question that's come up recently is the census. You know, that's a federal requirement that states carry out. Is that information going to be affected by this bill?
Why would it be?
Well, because my understanding is that census workers are employed by the state, and I don't know the answers to this, but that's a question that's come up recently, that it's a federal requirement. The state uses the data. The state, the information and data gets shared with the feds and so on.
Wouldn't the governor under this bill be able to say, right on, let's keep that going?
Maybe. Maybe this governor would. Maybe the next governor wouldn't. Again, I know there are a lot of concerns that I think that need to be addressed. And it's going to be an interesting debate. It'll be interesting to hear the testimony. And, you know, maybe the information the Senate got will suffice, and many people will change their vote to support it.
Is your position flexible, or do you feel?
Yeah, I'm open to it, but I have not had any of, you know, I always rely heavily on my constituents. But personally, you know, I'm a fire and rescue chief. I believe in mutual aid. It's a very important part of what we do. And I don't want to step on anybody's toes, and nor do I want to put anybody in a position where anything is affected going forward, especially with law enforcement. It's too critical. I don't believe that this law provides any sort of immunity to officers acting in good faith should something go wrong, astray down the road. So there's some things that I want to make sure that I feel out. But I'm open at this point. I've asked my constituents. And, you know, the feedback I've gotten right now is a lot of them are not supportive.
We're going to talk more about this. We're also going to look at this broader question of balancing party politics at the state level and at the national level. And we're going to take your calls and questions as well. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. You can also post comments on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Senator Dustin DeGree, a Republican from Franklin County, is co-sponsor of a Senate bill that tries to limit the ability of federal law enforcement to enlist local police in Vermont to carry out deportation orders. House Minority Leader Don Turner, a representative from Milton, is not on board with that legislation. It passed the Senate unanimously, but Turner says there's likely to be some pushback, at least from his caucus, in the House. Listeners, where do you stand, and what questions do you have for how Vermont Republicans are framing their positions in the State House against the federal backdrop? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Judith in Hardwick says, when undocumented people are arrested, jails routinely send their fingerprints and other personal info, including immigration status, to the FBI, which gives it to ICE. It is at this juncture that state law enforcement intersects with federal immigration policy. This new bill prohibits sharing of personal info, especially now when Trump's executive order allows deportation of people accused but not convicted of crimes. Does the new bill prevent that transfer of information through prisons and jails? Senator DeGree?
No, it doesn't. If there's a, you know, if there's an undocumented worker who's arrested for a DUI, that person is going to be prosecuted and charged to the full extent of state and federal law. What this, the identifying information is for the sole purpose of creating registries. So any instance where we share information already for the federal government isn't going to change unless it's for the purpose of creating registries. And to get back to the census, I'd say a couple things. One, the census is a constitutionally mandated exercise that this country goes through every 10 years. We can't get out of that. Two, Title 13 clearly states that any information gathered by the Census Bureau is strictly prohibited from sharing that with anybody. People can't be charged with crimes for that. Agencies can't go and arrest folks for that. And there's actually an instance when this did happen during World War II. One of the War Powers Act allowed them to share that information, and that led to the internment of Japanese Americans. So, you know, I think that no one is looking to relive that part of our history. So I think the census question is a good question. But again, when you look at the data and you understand the facts, you realize that this isn't something that's going to affect that. But the information sharing is for the purpose of creating registries. It's for, you know, whether it's a Muslim registry or an immigrant registry, this is the type of thing that this bill is looking to stop. And I don't think that that activity really falls into the values that we hold as Americans with immigration status and with refugees. So if an undocumented worker is picked up for a DUI or charged with a criminal crime, they're going to be prosecuted to the full extent of state and federal law.
Let's go to David calling in from Barrie. Hi, David. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling because I'm, you know, I see all the national news, and I'm really concerned about the rise of the alt-right, and I think you have to call it out when you see it, especially here in Vermont. And I'm concerned, and my question is for Don Turner. And, you know, your caucus has spent a lot of money employing this woman, Meg Hansen, who wrote a column that was really critical of this immigration bill, and Governor Scott, and she's, you know, gone on Twitter. She writes a lot of really false and inflammatory things against LGBT people, refugees, you know, and it's really concerning. So I guess my question is, do you guys still work with Ms. Hansen, and has this hatred and these views that she espoused made your working relationship with Governor Scott any more difficult?
David, thanks for the call. Representative Turner?
Yeah, thank you for your call, David. Yeah, Meg does still work for us. She's worked for the last year and a half. She helps with writing, messaging, and op-eds and things like that. But what she does personally is her own business. She's a columnist. I do not get involved in what she writes for herself and for her columns. I think, it creates a little bit of challenge between the governor's office and myself sometimes, but that's life. I mean, she has her opinion and every right to it. We're fortunate in this country. Everybody has the right to say what they believe, and she's a columnist, and she will continue to do that. Where she gets her information, I'm not sure when she writes her columns. Everything that she does for us is based on data that we have and we provide through the legislature.
And let's go to Bill calling in from Claremont, New Hampshire. Hi, Bill. Your thoughts today?
Yes. Good afternoon. I'm sort of interested and amused by the biased media's use of undocumented immigrants as opposed to illegal aliens. Evidently, they must have changed the style book. But I think just in those use of those words alienates the public, so that maybe they are undocumented immigrants rather than what they are, illegal aliens. They're here illegally.
Bill, I take your point, and I'm going to put this to Dustin Degree because he co-sponsored legislation that addresses this. But let me also just address it from our perspective, at least for Vermont Edition. We use the words undocumented migrants or immigrants because illegal aliens, in some cases, people have committed a crime, and in some cases, an actual criminal crime. And in some cases, it's a civil penalty, depending on how somebody got into the country and how they became out of status. And undocumented immigrant speaks more to the condition, whereas illegal alien speaks more to a person, and that in itself has become a very biased term. So we are trying to use neutral terminology that actually explains a situation rather than sort of puts a judgment on it. So that's our perspective on the words undocumented immigrant versus illegal alien. Those terms both very politicized in this current climate. But Senator Degree, what do you think about Bill's point that, you know, these people are not here legally, and we shouldn't be protecting them?
So what I would say is that this bill does not doesn't hinder the ability of the federal government to enforce immigration law. This bill doesn't hinder the ability of the federal government to strengthen immigration law. And I think that there are valid concerns with the federal immigration system and whether or not our borders are safe, whether or not our borders are as strong as they should be, and whether or not the federal government is enforcing the immigration laws the manner in which they should be. But I think it's a wholly different question if you want my local law enforcement in Franklin County, the Swanton Police Department, the St. Albans Police Department, to be deputized without a sign-off from the governor to go and round up undocumented workers and deport them. I think that it's a states' rights issue. It's a federalism issue. I feel that our local law enforcement draw their power from the Vermont state constitution. We are a sovereign state in this country, and I think that federal immigration law needs to be left to the federal government. And as far as undocumented workers, we have a situation in Vermont where you have at least 1,000 dairy workers here doing a very important job in a very important industry, not only to our economy, but to who we are as Vermonters and our history. And it is a belief across political spectrum that the law is flawed, that we need a system to get dairy farmers the ability to have the same privileges that apple orchards have and hospitality workers have. So I think that I'm not willing to jeopardize the dairy industry in this state over the use of a specific vernacular. So I think that, you know, it is a challenge and it is tough, but it's up to the federal government to enforce immigration laws, not Vermont law enforcement.
Don Turner, do you take a position on terminology? I mean, Bill's saying, call it what it is, and he believes that the term illegal alien is appropriate, and that depending on and I think we can all agree that depending on what words you use, that does influence how people think of things. I mean, that is the power of language. Do you take a position?
I don't personally take a position on it. I know there are people in our caucus that feel very strongly about it. I mean, that was their career. I mean, and they were dealing in this situation. So,
what do you mean? You mean,
well,
like
people that work for Border Patrol and ICE and so on. That.
And what terminology do they prefer?
Well, they would use illegal alien, and that's what they would continue to use.
But you don't take a preference?
Personally, I don't have a preference either way.
Do you have thoughts on how you balance, Representative Turner, your ideas about who you are and who Vermont Republicans are and who Republicans writ large across the country are? Because there seem to be, you know, differences. And we have a Republican governor who is pushing back against presidential executive orders. We have Republicans in the state house who may feel like they're a little bit caught in between. I'm curious about what you feel.
Well, I think that under the Republican, we have a big tent. I mean, we're like the Democrats. I mean, Democrats are mostly progressives today, or a lot of Democrats are progressives. So I think we have a very big tent. We don't necessarily have Tea Partiers in Vermont, like in lots of states, but we do have some very conservative people. In our caucus, 53, we have very conservative to more moderate. And I would say that I'm much more moderate than many of the members of the caucus. But I don't think we have a line that defines them. I think there are particular issues. You know, we tend to bring the caucus together on the money issues. Not so much on the social issues. I've done a lot of work in the last 6 years on focusing on taxes and, you know, spending and so on. That's how we've been able to bring the caucus together. On the rest of the stuff, such as immigration, hey, you represent your constituents. You do what you have to do to make sure that they feel that their voice is being heard in Montpelier. That's been what I believe. That's what I convey. And that's what our caucus believes.
Dustin DeGree, can I turn back to this bill just for a second as we discuss these broader issues? Part of the language in this bill rests some decision-making in the hands of the governor when it comes to cooperation with federal authorities. And I'm curious why you didn't craft more of a role for the legislature in working with the presidential administration, given that this is in response to what Governor Scott has said he sees as federal overreach prompted by a president, you know, one person in power. You know, certainly Vermont is not immune to having a governor who has a very particular set of beliefs that person might try to impose on people. So why put this decision making, why write it into the bill that the governor has the power to sort of not exactly yay or nay, but to really have this power in the dynamic?
Because I think that the governor is really, you know, the chief law enforcement officer in the state of Vermont. He's the person in the separation of powers that enters into contracts and things like this. And I think that if something were to come down the road, I wanted to be sure that the state had a nimble mechanism for that decision to be made and to be made quickly. You know, he's also – I represent 50,000 people in Franklin County. You know, Don represents a good-sized community in Chittenden County, but he really represents the entire state. So – when we are making decisions, we're thinking about, you know, the very real geographical consequences that it has for us. But I think the governor has that broader, you know, understanding of the state and the, you know, the kind of the temperature of the state. And, you know, it also says that he'll make these decisions in consultation, only consultation. It's not a sign off, but in consultation with the attorney general. So we added that legal aspect there as well. You know, I just think that at the end of the day, the governor is the one where the buck stops, right? It's his job to make these decisions. And I think that certainly I was comfortable with Governor Scott making these decisions going forward.
Let's go to Victor calling in from Concord. Hi, Victor. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
I don't know how, I very rarely hear anybody talk about this stuff from the point of view of the police. If a police officer or a sheriff stops somebody who's driving and they provide them with a false ID, like a false driver's license, that in itself is a crime. Now, he doesn't know who the person really is. They might already have DWIs against them. There might be other charges. They have to take them in to figure out who they are in case they're a criminal. That's what would happen to me if I gave a false driver's license because my license was suspended. It's two criminal acts, the false license and driving without with a suspended license. You have a whole series of things that goes into play now. And telling the police that they can't ask about the immigration status or trying to somehow resist the federal government's doing their job. I mean, I have sympathy for these people who are undocumented workers. A lot of them are great folks. They're some of the hardest workers I know. But they got to get legal. There's some.
So, Victor, let me stop you because we're short on time. But this question of does this inhibit the law enforcement officials from being able to do anything that they have previously been able to do when it comes to asking for somebody's ID or trying to determine who the person is? And Senator DeGree, since you co-sponsored this particular legislation, does it actually tie the hands of law enforcement in the way that Victor thinks that it might?
No. As I said before, anybody who commits a criminal crime, whether you're here legally or not, will be prosecuted to the full extent of state and federal law. All this says is that if a local law enforcement officer pulls somebody over for speeding, the question can't be asked, are you here legally or not? And that is what we've been doing for nearly a decade in this state.
So if somebody doesn't have a driver's license, the police officer can still take that person in and try to investigate who they are and
yes.
what their status or, you know, what who they are and whether they have crimes against them.
But keep in mind, in the state of Vermont, we have non-driver IDs. There are undocumented workers here who have the privilege to drive in the state of Vermont. So, again, we have almost closed that loophole in Vermont. So it doesn't inhibit local law enforcement. It doesn't tie anybody's hands. It doesn't stop the federal government from enforcing federal law enforcement. It just says that we will not allow the federal government to deputize state law enforcement officers who get their power from our sovereignty without the governor saying yes or no.
All right, more to come on this as it goes through the House. Senator Dustin DeGree is a Republican from Franklin County. House Minority Leader Don Turner is a representative from Milton. Thanks very much to both of you.
Thank you very much, Jane.
You're listening to Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont colleges often play host to guest lecturers and visiting dignitaries and scholars. Students, faculty, and community members turn out for campus lectures because the speakers have experience to share, and often a strong point of view that will spark conversation and debate. This week, Middlebury College finds itself in a situation that has vexed many colleges around the country. When is a controversial speaker a useful catalyst for discussion, and when is he or she a provocation that causes harm instead of learning? A student group called the American Enterprise Institute Club invited Charles Murray to speak on campus this Thursday. Murray is an AEI fellow who's most famous for arguing that intelligence is a predictor of socioeconomic status and that there are differences in intelligence that fall on racial lines. The lecture is co-sponsored by the Political Science Department. The chair of Middlebury College's Political Science Department, Bert Johnson, describes Charles Murray this way.
He has authored a number of books, most well-known for a book called The Bell Curve, written a little over 20 years ago, and his most recent book, Coming Apart. And he's extremely controversial because in both of those works and in other writings, he has made arguments about the immutable nature of hierarchy, particularly racial hierarchy. So we acknowledge that he is an extremely controversial speaker, and we want to make it clear that any co-sponsorship does not represent agreement with his views.
But the head of the Sociology and Anthropology Department, Michael Sheridan, is opposed to this speech by Murray. He is working with a group of people on campus to plan a response to the talk. I spoke with him this morning and asked Professor Sheridan to characterize Charles Murray's work.
Is it scholarship is one of the core questions. The gold standard of how academic scholarship happens is through peer review. Peers in a discipline staying current with a literature, keeping up on a topic, carrying that debate forward, is part of responsible scholarship. And I see a lot of what Murray is doing as being resurrecting very old debates from the 19th century about evolution of races and from the early 20th century about eugenics, and breathing new life into these old topics as if they were current, and thereby making them current, whereas many other aspects of social science have moved on to very new paradigms and topics. So that's what he's not engaging the rest of his own discipline. So the issue with Murray is that his work is not peer-reviewed, and when it does get post-publication peer review, people tend to find that it's full of claims that are not well supported, misinterpretation of data, methodological problems in how particular social statistics get converted into conclusions. I think that he's more of a scientific racist pseudoscientist rather than a straight-up political scientist.
So is your opposition to having him on campus based on the fact that you see this as pseudoscience, or that you find him offensive, or that he claims to be an academic and yet is not because he's not being peer-reviewed?
I'm not opposed to his presence on campus. I think that he should speak. What I'm opposed to is giving him a larger and more legitimate soapbox than I think he deserves. So having him speak, it's going to be on Thursday at 4:30, having him speak at that event, where he might take a couple of questions at the end, gives him a chance to lay out exactly what he thinks on issues of class and race and social science without giving an opportunity for subjecting him to that peer review, in effect, live. What I would like to see would be him to appear on campus as part of a panel, as part of a structured debate, as a way to engage him on his ideas, and therefore have faculty and students show him and each other how to carry forward a respectful and a constructive debate on these issues. So it's not a should he speak or should he not speak issue for me. It's how should he speak.
It's a student group that brought him to campus, and the Department of Political Science has co-sponsored that event. Shouldn't the students get to decide how they want to present this speaker?
Of course. Students are very free to bring speakers as they see fit. Part of the issue here is the poli-sci department co-sponsorship. So that gives a bit of a veneer of legitimacy in academic terms to the event. I haven't contacted any of the students about this, so I don't know what their motivations. But I suspect that this invitation was precisely in order to get a vigorous debate going. And I think they have succeeded in that goal.
Do you anticipate that there will be some sort of visible protest then on Thursday?
I think so. I hope that it is respectful and peaceful and, in effect, demonstrates how to engage controversy in a way that allows free speech to continue, because that's what it is, one of the highest values that we have as an academic community. So we don't want to shut things down, but to identify when something wrong is being said, to get those voices out there. So the actual nature of the protest, I don't know. From Googling around how people on other campuses have responded to Murray, I don't remember if it was Princeton or Swarthmore, but faculty and staff and students went to his talk dressed in black, apparently. And then as he began to speak, they stood up and left.
One of the things that I've been interested in is this question of how those forces should be balanced. That idea that you say free speech and different ideas should not only be tolerated, but should be encouraged in a campus setting. And yet you also want to have people feel safe, feel respected, feel like they are valued on campus.
Right. I feel like I'm walking sort of an ethical tightrope here. I think many academics do have a dual commitment to free speech and fair speech. And in this case, going back to where I started, basically, the idea that Murray has the opportunity to present his views without a chance for rebuttal is problematic to me. And so getting as many voices as possible into the debate would be what I would like to have happened instead of what is happening. So having underrepresented campus groups, student groups, faculty groups, minority groups, religious groups, however structured, have a place at that table would, I think, make a more informative and a better learning experience for the event. That is, this event should be something about learning for the academic community. And having more people talking at once with Murray would do more, I think, than having him alone with a microphone.
That's Professor Michael Sheridan. He chairs the Middlebury College Department of Sociology and Anthropology. At the top of the segment, we heard a comment from the chair of the Political Science Department, which has co-sponsored Charles Murray's visit to campus. I asked Bert Johnson this morning, what does it mean for his department to co-sponsor a controversial lecture?
My policy about co-sponsorship has always been to ask two questions. One, whether it's related to political science, and Charles Murray is in one way or another related to political science. He's a political science PhD, and he's been very influential in policy circles, especially over the last 25 years. So it seems that he's related to political science. And then number two, is there a community that would be interested in hearing him? And that was met as well by this group of students who approached me. I want to make it clear that a co-sponsorship is not tantamount to an endorsement. And part of why I have such a broad policy on co-sponsorship is because I do not want anyone to imply that my personal view has anything to do with the department's co-sponsorship of events.
But when you say that, the decision to still sponsor it as opposed to saying, you know, this is not a viewpoint that most of the department shares and yet we're co-sponsoring, I mean, is that a stand based on we don't determine the rightness or wrongness of a speaker?
This is a topic that's been debated within the department over the last few days, and I don't want to speak for my colleagues because there are various views on this about what co-sponsorship means. My view is I want to be very cautious about saying that my view should determine, my personal view should determine a co-sponsorship, because who knows what other speaker in the future could be denied under a policy that allows one's personal views to implicate that decision. I got to say, I have the greatest respect for my colleague, Mike Sheridan, who's opposing the speech, and I have tremendous respect for all those on that side. And I probably agree with them on more than I disagree with them on. But I made my decision based on those criteria, which I think are relatively neutral criteria. It is purely symbolic. I think what we are doing is signaling that this is political science related and may be of interest to students.
One of the criticisms that Mike Sheridan lays out is that he's not opposed to having Charles Murray come to speak on campus. He's opposed to the platform and the format, that Charles Murray isn't going to necessarily have to respond to his critics, that it's not a panel discussion where somebody's asking him tough questions. It's sort of an open platform for him to say what he wants. And I'm wondering if you share that criticism or if it matters.
Well, I certainly hope that people ask him tough questions. I hope and I trust that there will be people in that room who will challenge him on some of these views, which I do not believe are very well supported by data. I could support a shift to a debate format if he is willing to do so and if the group that's sponsoring it is willing to do so. One thing we're doing as a department is we're scheduling a gathering in the days leading up to the event where we in the department explain our views on Charles Murray's work so that we can talk about some of the flaws in his research in a way that conveys information to the broader public.
One of the other criticisms that Professor Sheridan laid out was that he doesn't believe Charles Murray is using any kind of rigorous academic structure for his work, that he portrays himself as a political scientist. As you have both pointed out, he has a PhD in political science, and yet he's not doing peer review. And Professor Sheridan believes he's not actually using up-to-date data to argue for his points. So to your point about him being in political science and having this degree, does it matter whether or not he's actually using a rigorous academic critique as part of his work?
I think it definitely matters, and I actually agree with Mike Sheridan on that. I think his evidence it's certainly not peer-reviewed, and I do not think his evidence is very strong. In fact, that's not strong at all in favor of his point of view. But what we do as academics is we try to unpack people's arguments and take them apart in an open format, and that's what we hope we'll be doing over the next few days.
How would you describe the conversations that are happening on campus and in the ether about this visit that's upcoming?
I think In a way, this has been very positive. I think everybody has treated each other, at least to the extent that I have seen, with a tremendous amount of respect. People are having very intense and passionate arguments in ways that I think are very productive. And my view of the department, of the college, of my colleagues, of Mike Sheridan, has all just grown more proud and respectful over the last few days because of this dialogue that we've been having. I think it's a tremendous sign about us as a community.
That's Professor Bert Johnson, chair of the Middlebury College Political Science Department. Charles Murray is scheduled to speak on campus Thursday afternoon. Watching Dad drive the wrong way down a one-way street or Mom have problems keeping up on the bills can be difficult, and talking to them about it can be even harder. Tomorrow on Vermont Edition, we'll discuss how to have difficult conversations with loved ones as they age. Share your thoughts by writing to vermontedition@vpr.net, and then listen tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening today.